one word in Pali, which is important to contemplate in terms of meditation. Ujung. U-J-U. M with a dot over it. M with a dot over it is pronounced N-G. Ujung. Which means upright. Ujung kayang. Kaya is body. So this is the wording in Pali of the Anapanasati Sutta. Ujung kayang panitaya parimukang upa panitwa is with body upright, back straight, legs crossed, ever mindful. One breathes in, ever mindful. One breathes out. Having gone to the forest, to a cave, to an empty hut, to a quiet place, even to a heap of straw. Ever mindful, one breathes in. Ever mindful, one breathes out. Breathing in long, one knows, I breathe in long. Breathing out long, one knows I breathe out long. Breathing in short, one knows I breathe in short. Breathing out short, one knows I breathe out short. Breathing in, one trains oneself. I will breathe in, experiencing the whole body. Breathing out, one trains oneself. I will breathe out, experiencing the whole body. Breathing in, one trains oneself. I will breathe in, calming the whole body. Breathing out, one trains oneself. I will breathe out, calming the whole body. Breathing in, one trains oneself. I will breathe in, sensitive to joy. Breathing out, one trains oneself. I will breathe out, sensitive to joy. Breathing in, one trains oneself. I will breathe in, sensitive to happiness. Breathing out, one trains oneself. I will breathe out, sensitive to happiness. Breathing in, one trains oneself. I will breathe in, sensitive to the thought formations. Breathing out, one trains oneself. I will breathe out, sensitive to thought formations. Breathing in, one trains oneself. I will breathe in, calming thought formations. Breathing out, one trains oneself, I will breathe out, calming thought formations. Breathing in, one trains oneself. I will breathe in, experiencing the mind. Breathing out, one trains oneself. I will breathe out, experiencing the mind. Breathing in, one trains oneself, I will breathe in, calming the mind. Breathing out, one trains oneself, I will breathe out, calming the mind. Breathing in, one trains oneself, I will breathe in, gladdening the mind. Breathing out, one trains oneself, I will breathe out, gladdening the mind. Breathing in, one trains oneself, I will breathe in, liberating the mind. Breathing out, one trains oneself, I will breathe out, liberating the mind. Breathing in, one trains oneself, I will breathe in, contemplating impermanence. Breathing out, one trains oneself, I will breathe out, contemplating impermanence. Breathing in, one trains oneself, I will breathe in, contemplating dispassion. Breathing out, one trains oneself, I will breathe out, contemplating dispassion. Breathing in, one trains oneself, I will breathe in, contemplating fading away. Breathing out, one trains oneself, I will breathe out, contemplating fading away. Breathing in, one trains oneself, I will breathe in, contemplating complete relinquishment. Breathing out, one trains oneself, I will breathe out, contemplating complete relinquishment. Mindfulness of breathing fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. When the four foundations of mindfulness are fulfilled, they fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment. When the seven factors of enlightenment are fulfilled, liberation of mind comes to completion and is realized. So during the meditation, I recited just a short version of the Anapanasati Sutta, the Buddha's teachings on mindfulness of breathing, going through the 16 steps, where it's just good to recite them and think about them from time to time and hold them. In terms of the next 30 minutes, there's a few different themes we could talk about that I could bring up to the group. I thought I would start with forgiveness because of the theme being goodwill for communities and globally. And how this ties in also with the Buddha's teachings on impermanence. And another translation of impermanence is also instability. And another translation, which was the way Ajahn Chah translated it, is uncertainty. And Thai, he said, "Mine," which is not sure. "Mine." He actually had when people asked Ajahn Chah what were the qualities which caused him to succeed in his practice, he said there was two. One was patient endurance. Two was contemplation of not sure. Say, applying that teaching of not sure to both the internal world and the external world. So we'll come back to that. So there's a forgiveness ceremony that we do in the Theravada tradition, and at Abhayagiri we do this all the time. If a senior monk leaves who's been living in the monastery for a period of time, or sometimes you do it at the beginning of the rains retreat or of a retreat period, you'll visit a venerated elder, especially in Thailand where we have so many monasteries and so many Ajahn Chah branch monasteries. We will go and pay respects to the local elder and do this forgiveness ceremony with them. And in brief, the origin of the ceremony, it stems from a story of Sariputta, the Buddha's right-hand disciple, foremost in wisdom. There were monks who didn't have much wisdom as well in the time of the Buddha, and one of these monks who didn't have much wisdom punched Sariputta in the face one day. He was jealous of Sariputta, and he claimed Sariputta had evil desires and just wanted to, you know, kiss butt to the Buddha and get perks that way. And so punched Sariputta in the face. And the exact wording in the sutta is he gave him a blow to the head, so essentially he walked up to him and punched him in the face. And then later on, felt remorseful. So that monk, I think he also came down with some sort of severe illness right afterwards. His body broke out with boils or something. And so he went to the Buddha. The Buddha said, "Well, you have to go apologize to Sariputta. Don't talk to me." And so this monk went up to Sariputta and bowed to him and said, I did something really horrible. I beg for your forgiveness." And Sariputta said, "Well, even as you hit me, I forgave you as you were hitting me. But if I've done anything wrong to you, may you forgive me as well." And so the wording of this ceremony comes from that exchange. where we will bow to the elder, do this chant of by body, speech, or mind, anything I may have done in your presence or not in your presence, intentionally or unintentionally, anything unskillful I may have done in relation to you, I ask forgiveness for that. And then the elder says, I forgive you, and if I've done anything inappropriate, may you forgive me as well. So it's this beautiful exchange. And it really, if there has been anything, like when you're living in community, you're living with a teacher every day, day in and day out, and you're undergoing this difficult training in the monastery, and it's inevitable that you're going to be upset or irritated with the teacher from time to time. And you do feel an energetic shift when you do this ceremony. There is a real sense of cleaning the slate. So we'll do it at least once a year with Ajahn Pasano, probably twice a year. And it just feels really good to do that kind of a ceremony. And it's for the long-term harmony, the long-term benefit of the community. And I think that's one of the reasons our communities succeed over the years and over the decades. Because if you don't have a ceremony like this, then grudges build up. The resentment never gets addressed. It builds up over time. And then you can run into a terrible situation down the road. Or if it's some sort of issue that, if there is some sort of issue, at least the forgiveness ceremony, it opens the door for dialogue, to be able to talk about what's going on. Now, linking this to spreading love and goodwill out in the local community and in the world, I like to link this to the Not Sure teaching because it just puts so much space around what's happening in this day and age, etc. Linking that up with forgiveness. And maybe I'll have to ask forgiveness from all of you after I give this talk, because I want people to raise up to a higher level of consciousness. But people have been critical of me for saying this kind of thing before, but it behooves us as Dhamma practitioners to raise ourselves up to a higher level of consciousness. And so I'm just going to go out on a limb and say, as an exercise in goodwill, so we've had goodwill for ourselves. We're able to do that. Perhaps we're able to do that. Maybe we're not. We've had goodwill for ourselves. Goodwill for our loved ones. And then as goodwill spreads out to the community and to the global community, we have, actually there's four steps in the suttas: goodwill towards strangers, then there's goodwill towards our enemies. And so actually as an exercise, this is an easy one to do. Okay, well, I can imagine an enemy in my mind, and yeah, I can have goodwill for them, like maybe some vague enemy, you know, but now this day and age, it becomes very easy to do this contemplation. And I'm going to say, just as a mental exercise, and if you're not able to do it, it's okay, but goodwill, spreading goodwill towards people who hold a different political view than us. So just hold that for a minute. Because in so many ways, they match the definition of enemy in the suttas. It's difficult, isn't it? goodwill towards those who hold a different political view than us. As monks, we're not supposed to get involved in politics. But it's difficult. It's difficult to not have a view. Okay, now bringing it back. Goodwill for oneself, just breathing for a minute and now imagine giving forgiveness to those people who might hold a different political view than us or who may have done harm in the world. I forgive you for any harm you may have done. May you forgive me for any harm I may have done to you through my actions of body, speech, and mind, through my negativity. And now imagine those we feel it most difficult to feel positive towards. Imagine them saying to us, "May you forgive me for anything wrong I may have done." Intentionally or unintentionally. Which may have had negative consequences. And now we need to exercise our discernment, and this is where the not sure teaching comes in, because we can apply not sure to everything internally and externally. So, there's so much bad in the world. Not sure. There's so much evil in the world. Not sure. Don't worry, it's all going to be okay. Not sure. So this not sure teaching, I believe it helps us to raise our discernment up to a higher level. That's why I say higher consciousness, because we have to be super careful that we don't devolve into just, and I bring up the subject of political views because now there's it's so how to say, people who never cared about politics. Suddenly everybody's super politicized. It was very striking. I was in Thailand for the last couple of years and came back, and it was very striking. So this is the suffering of views. There's the different types of clinging, clinging to views, clinging to self, clinging to sensuality. So if we say fight against something with aversion, we run the risk of simply adding aversion to the mix. So there's a big cauldron of hate and aversion bubbling away. And if we fight against something, we run the risk of adding to it, even if our view is a different view. The Buddha said that hatred never ceases through hatred. Only through love does hatred cease. So we could think of hatred as darkness. Darkness can't possibly cease through adding more darkness. But you shine a bright light, it disappears immediately. So I liked the analogy that Gil used of a tape, peeling off the tape, peeling the tape off of our heart. So there's a little bit of light shining through, and then peeling the layers off, the layers of not seeing clearly, the layers of ignorance, the layers of aversion, peeling those off, the light shines through, the darkness gets dispelled. So important. Here's another difficult thought exercise. Because I do, as a senior monk, I do check the news sometimes. I do look at CNN sometimes, just to see what other people are looking at. I read the odd article from time to time. And the news for me is, actually, it doesn't even depend on the news network. It seems like it's 99% negative. So, as a thought experiment, well, okay, let's imagine, so the news is sensational and it's 99% negative. Just think if that's all the negativity in the world. The news is telling us it's all the negativity in the world. Well, it's actually not that much then. That means there's mostly positivity in the world. Because the news is just a 30-minute program or whatever. It's got, maybe 15 or 20 negative things. It's not to say there isn't anything negative happening, but then just if you just take each article, okay, somebody got deported when they shouldn't have, a family got separated. Yeah, those are very bad things. Those genuinely are bad things. Those genuinely are negative things. What about the million families who haven't been separated? Those are positive things, putting it in perspective. It doesn't mean we don't fight against the negative or we don't disagree with the negative. We should. But it's very important to come back to looking at what we have that's positive as well. So it's just my opinion, but I think we have mostly positivity in the world, even this day and age. I've even had monks disagree with me on that. It's controversial, but it's not sure. It's all not sure. It's never just black or white. It's so easy just to side with one side or side with another side, but as Dhamma practitioners, we have to see, well, what's really going on here? Because that very that way of seeing things is going to come back into our practice, and we're going to be able to see the delusions in our own mind more clearly. It's just it's like we have to exercise our discernment. Not sure, not sure, not sure. If we come together with good energy, say that what Betsy was talking about, the march against climate change, that has the potential to be completely wholesome if we hold our minds in the correct way. But the reason I talk about this is because the way aversion works and the way anger works, it's so real. These energies are real. And in terms of like a protest or something, we really run the risk of adding to the negativity, and that then we aren't accomplishing what we want to accomplish. Non-violence, non-harming, these are so important. This is right thought in the Noble Eightfold Path. Thoughts of loving kindness, thoughts of compassion. Compassion for people who are doing harm. I mean, what sort of bad karma are they making? If the law of karma, the law of cause and effect, says that, well, what goes around comes around, what we put out there comes right back to us. This is also equanimity. The way we actually cultivate the four Brahma Viharas, there's different contemplations the Buddha gives. So for loving kindness, compassion, rejoicing or sympathetic joy, equanimity. There's a very short teaching where the Buddha says, okay, to cultivate loving kindness, may I abide in well-being, may others abide in well-being. So it's a wish for happiness. May I be happy, may others be happy. Compassion. May I be free from suffering. May others be free from suffering. So it's a slightly different angle. Sympathetic joy, mudita, rejoicing. May I not be separated from any good fortune I may have attained. May others not be separated from any good fortune they may have attained in their life. May I not be separated from happiness I may have attained. May others not be separated from goodness and happiness they may have already. Mudita, rejoicing. Upekkha, equanimity. That is a very interesting one because that comes. Equanimity is what arises when we reflect on karma. So the reflection the Buddha gives, the stock phrase is, I am the owner of my comma, heir to my comma, born of my comma, abide, relate, supported by my comma. Whatever comma I shall do, for good or for ill, of that I will be the heir, and of that I am currently the heir. Others abide by their comma, are born from their comma, supported by their comma, are heirs to their comma. Whatever comma they shall do, for good or for ill, of that they will most certainly be the heir. That comes back, that leads back to equanimity. Rather than like, I'm such a mess, I've got all these negative qualities, I'm never going to be enlightened, and then aversion towards oneself. Rather than the reflection on comma, okay, well, I've planted causes in the past which have led to this now, this reflection on comma, this is real, so there's nothing I can do about it. All I can do is plant new causes. So similar towards others. Look how good this person is. Oh my God. Give rise to a lot of attraction towards someone or something. Well, that person is that way because they planted good roots. Or on the flip side, aversion, repellent, feeling repelled or averse or angry towards a person or a group or an object even. Actually, objects don't have commas, so a person or a group, say, feeling averse, well, that they've planted negative seeds, they've planted the seeds of negative comma, and they are and will be receiving the results of negative comma. So coming back to equanimity, we don't need to punish them. We might even want to think, well, I'm the result of their comma, I'm going to punish them. But then we're in the danger of creating negative comma for ourselves, so that's why we have to be super careful. So these are just a few thoughts and reflections, and some of them might seem difficult or controversial, but these sorts of Dhamma reflections are for opening our minds, coming back to the core teachings of the Buddha, to the teachings on uncertainty and permanence, the teachings on goodwill for ourselves and others, goodwill for community, goodwill for the global community. And then coming back to a perspective, like if we get in that negative rut of there's so much negativity in the world, I don't know what I'm going to do about it. Well, not sure. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's not all negative. If we come back to that reflection of, okay, let's just imagine that only the news articles is all the negativity in the world. Well, then it's just overwhelming positivity. I can give another example of this to end on a positive note. The fires last year that happened in Redwood Valley and around Ubayagiri, many of our friends, on one of our alms rounds, Redwood Valley alms round, we go to 5 different houses, 4 of them burnt down. So 4 people on our alms route lost their homes. And then we would be in Fort Bragg or be out in the community. We'd meet up with people we knew. Oh, I lost my home too. Contractors, concrete workers, people we knew. So many people we knew lost their homes. And so we were in Fort Bragg one day met up with somebody who we know, and she's got her 2 little daughters with her, and she's saying they lost their house too, and she said, well, you know, what society kind of tells us is that when we have these apocalyptic scenarios, is that suddenly like everybody just starts attacking each other, and everybody starts eating each other and killing each other, and you see novels about it and all these kind of fear-based scenarios. And she said, so I was kind of like preparing myself for that. Like, you know, people are just going to grab, and, you know, anybody who lost their home is going to just get a short end of the stick, and especially if they didn't have insurance. And she said what was amazing and totally unexpected was the community coming together just in complete generosity, complete giving, till everybody was okay. Everybody had a place. Everybody had a place to stay. And this lady had moved from New Jersey or something a couple of years before. And when they lost their home, she was maybe thinking about going back or leaving, can't deal with this again. But then because of that immense goodness and generosity from other people, even others who had lost their homes as well, everybody looking out for each other, she said, well, I'm definitely staying. I don't want to move away from here. And this is also was independent of political affiliation. I know that especially in the area where we are, it's maybe even half and half. It's rural, very rural, and people hold a whole range of views. But those views are all set aside in a disaster like the fires, and everybody, the human goodness just coming out, everybody helping each other, just the immense and humbling level of generosity. So for myself, I just come back to that, and I try to expand that to the global community. Well, if this community, just California, rural America, just some community, if this community is like that, why, you know, probably there's other communities that are like this, and then I can expand that to the global community that I really think there's mostly goodness in the world, and that's why I personally don't feel worried about the world or worried about the political situation going on right now. But that's radical. I've had monks disagree with me about that. So I'm just putting it out there. I ask your forgiveness if I said or did anything wrong with this talk, but I just feel like it's healthy and important to put these things out there for contemplation, for reflection. And time is about up, so I'll leave it at that. I truly wish everybody well.
Hello, again. So as you know, the Madrones are offering the monastics their meal at 11:55. So parents of Madrones, meet your little ones down in the dining hall at 11:55. And then the Redwoods are still having their sweat right now, and they're not going to get out until 12:15. So that's right after we've all been served our lunch. So if you're the parent of a Redwood, please pick up a plate of food for your teen and take it to the yurt, because that's where they'll be after the sweat. And if you want to delay your meal by 15 minutes, you're welcome to take your own plate into the yurt and then have lunch with your teen if you like. As you all know, there's another tea ceremony that starts at 1 o'clock today. And because there are so many people, we thought it's going to end at 12 or 2:30 instead of 12:15. So just to give you a heads up on about that. And then it would be awesome if we could have two adults step in as dishwashers at 1 o'clock. Thank you so much, Anne. And then we just need another adult. This is to cover the yogi job for the thank you, Edie. Okay. Awesome. So the teen hangout is open today, this afternoon. And Letizia, you're covering that first shift from 12:45 to 1:45. Thank you. We just need two more people to cover the teen hangout supervision. So someone from 1:40. Thank you, Katie. So that's from 1:45 to 2:45, so an hour. And then from 6 to 6:45, it's just a 45-minute shift. Anyone want to? I'm sorry? Oh, you're on. Thank you, Sam. Okay. So art tent, we just need someone to support Lisa Louise in the art tent from 12:30 to 1:30, and then a 1:30 to 2:30 shift. So anyone can be in the art tent for an hour. Thank you, Gina. So 12:30 to 1:30? Okay, great. And then 1:30 to 2:30? Awesome. Remind me of your name again. Lele. Thank you. So you all know that you're going to attend the afternoon session of your children's youth groups for the first 20 minutes. And I just want to encourage those parents or those families that are here with just one parent to actually enlist. If you're here as a family and you have one parent and you have multiple children, I'm just encouraging you to enlist the help of another parent so that they can walk with your other child to their youth group, help sign them in, and then just support them through that first 20 minutes of their the check-in. So just to encourage you to do that. And then, no, it's okay. Oh, okay. Here, you can have mine. And then, I've got one here for you. No, it's okay. It's okay. Then at 3:45 to 4:30, there's an optional session with Ajahn Yanako here in the main hall, or you can hang out with Kara in the lower walking hall. Kara is her name. Kara, thank you for correcting me, and I'm so sorry I've been saying it wrong all this whole retreat. So Kara is going to be offering yoga down in the lower walking hall. You're welcome to join her. Today at 4:40 here in the main hall, manager's announcements, really important that you're here for that because there's just a lot of information, not a lot, but just important information for you to have around closing and wrapping up here at Spirit Rock. The Sarling, yes, so you're going to bow us in at 5:30 just to remind us of Noble Silence, and will you ring the bell at 5:45? Okay, thank you. Thanks. There will be another parent affinity group of Dharma in Recovery down with Kara in the lower walking hall at 6. There won't be any parent discussion groups tonight. Gil's not in the hall, right? Gil's not here, right? So we can talk openly. So we're going to celebrate him in our evening hall. Did you all finish the well wishes and appreciations? Awesome. So we're going to give that to him tonight. Thank you for doing that. So after the campfire, the Sequoias and the Redwoods are going to have a sleepover. The Redwoods are going to be in the community meditation center in the main hall, and the Sequoias will be upstairs in the community meditation hall in the west hall. It'll be supervised by the mindful leaders in training. Both groups are going to go to bed at the same time. I'm really encouraging them to go to bed at midnight. I know they're going to push back and probably advocate for like 12:30 midnight. And we'll just see how that all falls out, but nothing beyond 1 o'clock.
You have to use reverse psychology. Tell them to stay up all night. And maybe...
Do you want to make that argument with them? Actually, you could. You could. That'll put it, yeah. The Posito days. Totally. And the mindful leaders who are the mindful leaders of the Sequoias and the Redwoods have an early morning meeting at 7 o'clock. So we need four parents to come and relieve them at 6:45 in the morning tomorrow and wake up the teens at 7 a.m. So who would your Aunt Letizia, thank you. One hand, right? thank you. Anne, thank you. You have, you have three little ones. You don't have to be on this one. Yeah. Stacy, thank you. One more parent. Thank you. And remind me of your name again. Pam, thank you.